Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. Rick, where are you speaking to us from today?
From Florida, but that's going to change. I have, I think I mentioned last time we talked, I'd sold my home, and I pretty much had it with Florida, and I was out in San Francisco. It was great. It never got above 70 degrees in the dog days of summer.
Yes, Mark Twain once said the worst winter he ever spent was a summer in San Francisco.
He supposedly did, but my ideal summer is a summer where at least a couple days a week you got to put on a down parka, and that's what we had in San Francisco. It was fabulous.
Well, you see, that's why people love Vancouver. Average winter temperature 50 degrees Fahrenheit, 10 Celsius. Average summer temperature 72 Fahrenheit, 22 Celsius.
That sounds perfect.
It is, except we get a lot of rain. And I would say starting mid-September until May, you're going to see a lot of rain. That's why our trees are 250 feet tall.
We get ficuses that grow bigger than that. Just kidding. But it does rain. It rains. We've had the rainy season I think I've ever seen in my life, certainly here in Florida. And it comes down so hard for so long on so many days that you look at the plants and you sort of say, do you guys really need all of this water? So everything just grows here like crazy. Mm.
So, of course, the big financial news, the Fed finally cuts rates, not a quarter of a percent, but half a percent. Is it whoopee, yoo-hoo, good times ahead, let the good times roll, let the bells ring?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we're there. They finally did it, and I'm sure they're dancing in the streets on Wall Street, you know? I think the opposite is true. This is probably the single foremost instance in stock market history of the old adage, buy the rumor, sell the news. So we've been hectoring and rumoring the Fed to death for 4 years about you got to ease, we need easing. And it stands to reason that now that the news has finally arrived, we've got easing, it's time to sell this market. So I think that they basically have rung a bell this time to announce a bear market. And even though I've got somewhat higher targets and a few things that need to be fulfilled, particularly Microsoft with a 449.52 target, I think the bull is in its final gasp.
What should now, of course, we're seeing right now the S&P again at record highs, the NASDAQ also tickling those, the Dow not so much. What's happening then? Are people just so ecstatic over lower interest rates? You gotta invest in these markets?
It's so sick and it's so sad and it's so stupid that I don't see how any journal, any newspaper can comment on lowering the interest rates without laughing aloud. You know, because on its face, here we are starting to ease at a time when the stock market is at all-time highs, real estate is at astronomical valuation levels, and so obviously they have to come up with some reason to give all these talking heads something to talk about so they don't embarrass themselves too much. So they say, well, we've eased really because of the job situation. And even there, you've got this kind of oddity that nobody in America wants to work anyway. So there is some question really as to how much impact easing is going to have on creating jobs. And you know that we never create quite enough of them at pay levels that are keeping all those wage earners even solvent. So that's what we're going to get for the easing.
Well, so many sectors still have labor shortages.
Which sectors are those?
Well, I don't know. I still hear high tech companies are looking for people. Startups are looking for people.
Are they? And if they do, what are they going to give us? More AI?
Yeah.
You know, give me more waitresses and taxi drivers, and that's what we need really. But what is high tech going to do? Are they going to give us another Twitter or TikTok? That's what high tech is.
Yeah.
So let them starve for workers. The more starving they are, the less progress we're going to have in this toward digital, going over the edge, really. I'm not a big believer in AI, as you know. We've talked about that before. And I'm tending to judge AI by what happens when I try to dictate a simple sentence into my phone and it makes, five mistakes in one short sentence. It doesn't even know how to capitalize letters, and here we are talking about large language. That's what I'm doing when I dictate into a phone. We're talking about large language models, but it's the bottom line is AI is simply to eliminate jobs. It's not bringing any miracles that I can detect so far.
Yeah, as you pointed out, spell check is AI in action. And the worst thing is, I sent a text to a friend. I said, I hope your poorly doing mother is doing better now. And it said, I plan to piss in your mouth.
Yeah, that's the state of AI, really. I mean, that just kind of, it does sum it up. But there's just so much hubris and blather about AI, and it's even in the context of AI is going to bring San Francisco back. It's going to fill up all the office towers and things like that. And it reminds me that there's that old song, I guess, from maybe the 30s, Jim Dandy to the Rescue. Jim Dandy can do just about whatever you need him to do, and that's what we've got with AI.
Is there over-reliance on that?
Relying on it.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's relying on it yet. They're just trying to figure out ways to use AI to replace what few human workers are left. So I think I talked about this. I've seen it at Microsoft. The handwriting on the wall there is they were going to eliminate a global force of tech support people and try to have you talk with AI. But if you've talked with any voice-driven menus, they're all idiots too. I mean, they're as bad as spell check and auto text and all that. No matter whose AI you're speaking to on the phone, they don't get you to the right person, and whatever you're wanting to find out, they don't give you the answer. So that's where AI is.
I was going to say companies that, of course, replace their receptionist with an electronic switchboard. That switchboard doesn't know who's actually in to help people, and if there's somebody there asking, who should I talk to about this? It can't tell you that.
Uh-huh.
Just simple stuff like that.
Simple stuff like that. So anyway, I don't think AI is going to save the world, but I don't think lower interest rates will either. And if we could talk about that for a little bit, it starts with this idea, okay, well, maybe interest rates are coming down. Number one, how far can they come down? Number two, what's it going to accomplish? And I challenge anybody, even the most imaginative cheerleading chill on Bloomberg, to tell me, how to answer those couple of questions. You know, suppose one thing we're not going to get with this AI, with the interest rates coming down, is a refi cycle, and that's really a very it's probably the hottest cash infusion you can bring to the economy. People cashing out borrowing on the equity value of their homes. But to do that requires circumstances that couldn't possibly be duplicated at this point. You know, we had a great refi cycle where everybody in their homes right now is probably, if there's a mortgage or a second mortgage, it's at 3 or 4%, right? So if you say, well, how far would interest rates have to fall before someone with a 4% mortgage does a refi? And the answer is, who knows, 2.5, 3%. Well, how do mortgages get to 3% from here? Even if that were possible, the only way it could happen is in a collapsing economy, you know, with home prices falling. So with home prices falling, you no longer, the refi becomes impossible because your loan to equity value is, it goes out well out of whack. So you can't borrow nothing. And so we're not going to get a refi cycle with this lowering of interest rates. And I would predict that even if we get down there in the 3% range, it's only because the economy has collapsed and the 3% yields are chasing falling asset values, something like 2007 and 8, when home values were falling 10% a year.
Why is it, you think, that they clamored for lower interest rates? Because to me, at the rate that they were, seemed about perfect. You can make a decent amount of money if you're trying to save money, but it's not that costly for loans. But on the other hand, credit card companies like Walmart, for example, their interest rate now is almost 30% on their credit cards. Any excuse for that?
Why have we gotten conditioned to think lower rates are somehow going to be good? It's one of those big lies that the media, because they're too stupid and ill-educated to get at the truth even remotely, they've conditioned, they think it's almost like the election. You know, they practically got us convinced that Kamala Harris is an actual candidate. And if you repeat a lie enough, people just start to, they'll shrug and say, well, okay. So if you ask the average person about, you know, how have lower interest rates affected your life? The person would say, what? You know, he'd respond with incredulity. But if he thought about it, he might be able to, you know, he would say, well, geez, I don't know. I mean, it's certainly, everything seems to cost more. I can barely afford to get by right now. So just count me as not a believer in lower interest rates. But you've seen how lower interest rates inflate asset values, and it's to the extent that some of America's, you know, a portion of America's middle class is wealthy, it's all real estate wealth. You know, people bought houses at the right time, the houses went up in value, and now they think they're rich. And so it's created kind of a big gap between the haves and the have-nots. So in that respect, the have-nots, even the ones without a college education, can appreciate one of the inequities of lower rates. It's really the way in which the Fed favors certain people, the government favors certain people over others, asset holders, and you know, the working stiff can see where that's gotten them. So the newspapers continue to headline the lie about interest rates. I don't think they even quite believe it anymore. They just sort of do the ray-rawing because it beats trying to have to think about the real economy, what's really happening, and to write about it. There's nobody coming out of J school that has even thought about those things. They're too busy, you know, wanting to save America by electing Democrats. So we don't even, the press doesn't even ask the questions. It's just become sort of a bad habit to repeat this. It's not even a mantra about lower rates. They just sort of, it's the story. It's like that's, and nobody really believes it or believes in it, but it's just the story. So they keep blathering it over and over again like it really means anything, or like the job statistics that they release mean anything at all. They don't. You know, everybody can look around and see where we are, and they can see you know, answer that question. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And you take any four-year period, it doesn't matter whether there was a Democrat or Republican president, nobody's better off.
Is the stock market much like an airplane then, where you tip the nose up, but it can only go for so long before it stalls out, spins, and crashes?
Yeah, I think that's the way it'll happen. It's not going to be, it's not going to come about because everybody piles onto the market and buries it with stocks for sale. It will be a sputtering out because there's no lift anymore. So yeah, that is I think where we're headed.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, what's the situation with gold?
Gold is, I've had a target of 2770, I think, but we've changed contract months. Let me give you, just my luck. I somehow logged out of my app, but I've been using a target at 2771. I like gold, and I keep some for myself. I gave my kids like starter kits to save, put something away in gold. But I'm not one of those, I'm not a Ray Rod gold's going to 5,000 kind of guy. I've always felt that gold would do relatively well compared to all other investable assets, no matter what crisis we are looking at just ahead. So basis the December COMEX gold contract, we've traded, we've been a little bit above 2,600. So it means we've got another 160 points or so, 150 points to get to what I would call meaningful resistance. But I do think we'll get there. And it's anybody's guess, really, as to how the stocks will perform, because the stocks are subject to a lot more, more variables, really, than affect physical gold. So you could get a lot of demand for physical, but the mining companies and the exploration companies, with all the expenses they have, it's a whole different calculation. So so there's a little bit of lag there in some of the gold ETFs, GDXJ for one, which tracks the mining, the junior miners, the exploration companies. But at some point, we're going to have gold in the ground, it'll be worth something. And right now, most gold mining companies are undervalued with respect to their proven reserves and certainly what may lie below that they haven't even discovered. So you got to like gold, but it's been a difficult hold for the faithful.
You think the BRICS really will roll out a digital currency this time called the unit that's 40% backed by gold?
Well, we are all the time talking about that, and I'm not a believer in BRIC or third world currencies or anything like that. And just to avoid, to cut to the chase, really, we use currency for trade, transactions, domestic, international, whatever. We need it for buying stuff, all right? But all the stuff we buy in the whole world in a year doesn't even amount to $200 trillion. I don't think global GDP is let's call it $200 trillion. But the amount of money in play in the shell game of leveraged financial vehicles, the financialized global economy, that, depending, if you take the high end, you're up around $2.5 quadrillion. If you take if someone says, oh, well, you know, there are a lot of duplicated securities in that estimate, and if you knock it down by two-thirds, you're still like three times global GDP. So the business of this planet, far and away, like hugely, is just shuffling paper. We're a paper shuffling planet. So if you talk about replacing the dollar, you know, and you relate that to the puny little oil market, and I use that term you know, ironically, obviously the crude oil market is a huge market, but compared to the market for digital dollars, even the oil market is puny. So my question to all these people who say, yeah, we're going to get a digital currency, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to dump the dollar, I want them to explain how you replace those two and a half quadrillion, or let's make it $600 trillion, that are being used in a purely financial speculative way with whatever this new currency is. That's all. Just I don't even want to talk about it. I don't want to argue with anybody who can't answer that question.
What is the story with crude right now?
What is the story? Yeah. Well, it's come down really hard. I think, it's been politically manipulated. It's when energy prices are lower, it can certainly take the steam out of inflation. So I think that the extent it's fallen from low 80s to a recent low down around 65, currently up rallying to 71 and change, it was maneuvered lower by let's call them political forces. But, you know, for the biggest commodity market in the world, it's really pretty squirrely. It's we didn't have this when we were little. It's a completely destabilized market, and it's just a big speculative wad is what it is. So I can't, I can't take that too much further as far as well. Crude's going to, why is crude moving up? Well, China at the margin is buying more of it or whatever. It's hard really to think oil through at that level since it's just a wacky shell game or it's become one. So it is moving higher. Let me give you a target for November crude that you can use, or anyone who's listening who trades crude, this will be a good usable number. Hang on, I'm doing this left-handed. I think it's on its way to $74 and maybe, I can't get it right because I'm using TradeStation here, but a little close to $75 a share. That's where I think it's going to sputter out. So it's got another $3.50 to go before it gets there, and then it'll go into, it's back into its flaky universe and head down for no good reason.
Anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
I don't see how anybody could be in this market with yields on the long bond up above 4%. I mean, the market is all risk. There may be, as I mentioned, some more upside. I do have that unfulfilled target, Microsoft. We've been as high as 441.50, and the target I had a month ago was 449 and change. When it came down, I had a commentary out a couple weeks ago, and it said basically that if you get Microsoft right, you get the market right. So that's why I watch Microsoft closely. If any of your listeners saw the commentary that I put out there in the headline, I had a back up the truck number and buy it if it came down to 401.56. It came down to that number, overshot it by about 50 or 60 cents, and now it's in the throes of a rally that it's taken at over $40 higher. So Microsoft has been moving according to prediction, according to form. There are no surprises in it. So I would be very wary. I'm going to be, the flashing yellow or even flashing red will be out when the stock gets to 449. Now, even though to me this is a perfect time for the bull market to end, especially with the Fed finally having started to ease in actuality, and if I say bet the ranch on it, it's betting the ranch with a tight stop loss. You know, you always have to leave room for error, especially because, as I mentioned and as we know, every single bear has been getting it wrong since 2009. You know, we've all been calling tops for decades, more than a decade. So you have to take a this is the top, this is the end forecast with the grain of salt. And the grain of salt that I use is really just a tight stop. But I just have a gut feeling that there's so many things that are sort of coming together right here. Some of them really on the intuitive side, like, well, the Fed is finally easing. That's the news that we're supposed to sell. I think that's true.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
It's always a pleasure, Jim, to connect with you guys, and thank you for inviting me on.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Find us on X at HowStreet. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.